Okay, welcome back to what apparently was treated to be the most coveted installment of the series. Something that I mistakenly advertised would be talked about last week. You can call it a mistake, you can call it clever advertising, call it whatever you want. This is the issue about davening without kavana. Last week we spoke about davening with kavana, how important it is to have kavana. If we understand tefillah as a model of a conversation, of a relationship with Hashem, of course, we have to recognize that we're talking to Him, and we have to know what we're saying. So all that's very important. And we discussed some strategies for how we could improve Kavanah, because it's been very hard for many thousands of years. And we talked about the idea about using our body, using more wake-up calls, by tefillah, such an active process, that we have built in more reminders to help gather our focus. But the fact that this topic in particular, davening when there's no Kavanah, that it gains so much attention, interest, just shows how real we're being. Because, let's be honest, it's very hard for us to have any kavana. If it lasts a couple of brachos, a couple of lines, then we feel lucky, we feel like we're doing a great job. And we should, because kavana is not an easy issue. As I mentioned last week, already back in the days of the Talmud Yerushalmi, which is over 2,000 years ago, the Amorayim wrote that they were struggling with the very same thing. I quoted only part of this last week, but if you look in source number one, the first person, Rabbi Chiya, in the Gemara says that he doesn't think that most of his tefillos were with kavana. He thinks maybe one time in his life he was able to have proper kavana when davening. One time in his life, he thinks. Mara quotes that Shmuel, the great Shmuel, said that when he's davening, often he finds himself counting chickens. He's in the office, he's busy at the field, he's busy worrying about his business or worrying about how many chickens he has at home. Or someone else said he counts bricks when he's davening. I'm not sure if he was a contractor, or maybe he was literally staring at the bricks in shul. I have to admit, I've done that before. Sometimes your mind wanders, like, hey, that brick, that design's out of place. And like you just start counting up the wallpaper, counting up the designs on the wall. And then this line was from last week, where it's underlined, Rabbi Masania said that I have to thank my head, because it knows when to bow. I have no idea what I'm saying. I have no idea where I am. But my head knows where to bow. So this is a very old issue. So we shouldn't feel bad that kavana is so difficult. In fact, in source number two, the Gemara in Maseches Erevin says that no one is going to be held accountable for the lack of kavana. Chazal felt that it was so difficult to have kavana during tefillah that we're like drunk people. We're not going to be held accountable for our actions because it's just too hard. It's too difficult. And this actually has halachic ramifications. In source number three, the Shulchan Aruch writes that the real halacha is supposed to be that when a person is davening, that they absolutely have to have kavana for the first bracha of Shmoneh Esrei. As mentioned last week, tefillah is a relationship with Hashem. Reb Chaim told us that there's a second level aside from kavana of the words, there's kavana of knowing you're standing in front of Hashem. So the first bracha is about acknowledging who Hashem is. It's an introduction. We have to have that kavana. So back in the days of the Gemara, if a person wouldn't have kavana during that bracha, they'd have to repeat that bracha and go back and say it again. However, if you look in source number three at the end where it's underlined, the Rama writes, "V'ha'idna nowadays ein chozrin b'shvil chesron kavana. We no longer have to repeat because of a lack of kavana. She'af b'chazara. Even if you do it again, karohu shelo yechavin. What's it going to help? You're not going to have kavana the second time either. Imkein lama yachzar. So why should you say it again? Again, this acceptance, being resigned to the fact that kavana is just so hard. We're exempt. We're like drunk people. We can't be held accountable, and it's just something that's not something we're capable of doing." However, we can't take this too far. We can't, you know, sit back and say, all right, great, we never have to daven with kavana, so I guess we're off the hook. In source number four, Chacham Avadi Yosef, who passed away about 7 years ago, was a Sephardi chief rabbi in Eretz Israel. So he writes that there was one Talmud Chacham, he doesn't list the name, which I guess is very kind, because he says this one Talmud Chacham went around telling people, you know what? Don't worry about having kavana. Don't even bother. Don't try having kavana. The Gemara says it's no longer possible, and we're no longer going to be held accountable, so just don't worry about it. Just daven mindlessly, just say whatever you feel like, and don't worry about it. So Chacham Avadia writes that that's terrible. That's nonsense. He says, yes, we're not going to be held accountable. We're only human after all, but we have to try our best. And last week we talked about trying our best. And this idea is manifest in source number five and source number six. Shulchan Aruch writes that, look, we try our best to have kavana, but, you know, mentioned last week about finding a good place to daven, a good time to daven. But nowadays, he writes in source number five, don't bother. We're not so careful about this because, listen, we're not having kavana anyway. But in source number six, Mishnah Berurah quotes from earlier sources that we have to try. Don't give up. Okay, so we're not going to achieve the perfect levels of kavana that they had in ancient times. Okay, but still, we have to do what we have to do. So I'd like to share tonight four different suggestions of how to daven without kavana. Now, title of the shiur might be misleading. It might sound like, I'm going to tell you the greatest thing to do is to daven without kavana. Here's how to daven without kavana. What the title means to say is that if you're not going to have kavana, and we do struggle to have kavana, it's a very old struggle, here are some suggestions of, not like last week where we're going to work on having kavana. Here's some work on accepting the fact that we're not having kavana, but what can we do to salvage our tefillos? Doing the best we can, recognizing we're not going to be 100% at the level that it used to be. So in source number 7, the Tur in the 1300s, which this Tur is the basis for the Shulchan Aruch, he writes that, you know, there's perhaps an extra level of kavana needed by the end of each bracha. So maybe suggestion number 1 is to set our bar really low. If we keep thinking that we're going to have the perfect kavana, we're going to be davening, you know, the whole way through, shuckling like the guy from Dallas watching the guy at the Kotel. If we're going to be davening like that the entire time, we're going to be disappointed and we're going to feel like we're not doing a good job. But let's start much smaller. Okay, my plan is not to daven with kavana the entire thing. I'm going to just the end of the bracha, just when I say atah. When I'm saying atah, I'm reminding myself I'm talking to Hashem. Maybe not every atah, some atahs. This one, Esrei, my goal is I'm going to have 1 or 2 atahs. Then when I say them, it shakes me out of my sleepy, you know, rote davening. It shakes me up and it makes me realize I'm talking to Hashem, atah. It's a personal conversation. Or maybe the word Hashem. Maybe that's a good reminder that we're talking to Hashem. So that's suggestion number 1. Salvage whatever we can to say we're not going to have kavana, but just set the bar really low. Maybe you'll have kavana just 1 or 2 words in Shmona Esrei. Important words. The end of a bracha signifies that we're talking to Hashem. A second suggestion is taking it a little bit further. Further meaning that perhaps we're not even going to have that. We're not even going to have kavana for 1 word in each bracha or for some words throughout. Let's say you find yourself completely spacing out and you wake up toward the end of Shmona Esrei. So this is a topic that the Chafetz Chaim discusses in source number 8 in the introduction to his Sefer Shmiras Halasha. He says, what should a person do if they wake up in the middle of the 17th or 18th bracha and they realize they haven't been focusing? So he writes a mashal, and I'm going to modernize the mashal a little bit. When I say a little bit, I mean a lot. So imagine an Amazon seller. This is obviously not the Chafetz Chaim's mashal. So imagine an Amazon seller who sells electronics, who sells iPads. And I don't know what an iPad goes for. I think it's like 300 or 400. Honestly, I haven't bought an iPad. People tell me now that my kids are 2 years old, I have to get them an iPad, you know? It's the only thing you have to do. My kids can't really talk complete sentences at this point, but if they would, they would say, why do all the other 2-year-olds have iPads? It's true. It's a fair complaint. But anyway, so let's say iPads go for $400. So this seller wants to sell them for $400. But by mistake, when typing in the price, he leaves out a 0. The seller posts them for $40 instead of $400. So obviously Dan's Deals gets a hold of it and starts proliferating it. Everyone should know that this amazing sale, that iPads are going for $40. So the seller is sitting there and watching as one after the other gets taken. He posted 2,000 iPads and he watches as they keep going and going. And he's saying, why am I selling so quickly? He looks over and he sees he made a mistake. And by now, Dan's Deals are so good that we've already gone through over 1,000 iPads, and over 1,000 iPads have already been sold out. And he's watching it as every second more and more are going. And he sits there all depressed and he says, oh, I really messed up with this business. And someone shakes him and says, what do you mean? Just cancel the rest before it's too late. And he says, nah, it's over. I've lost all those iPads. He says, no, but you have 800 left. You have 700, you have 600 left. Why are you giving up? And that's the Chafetz Chaim's sort of mashal. That's the mashal he sort of alludes to. The idea of, okay, so maybe you woke up in the 17th bracha, and often we feel that, you know, what's the point at this point? You know, why should I bother having more kavana for the rest? I already squandered this entire tefillah. I've been mindlessly flipping pages, or I wasn't flipping pages. I don't know how I got here. Eslach Lanu or Modem wakes us up and we say, forget it. It's a wasted tefillah. He says, no, why would you be like that Amazon seller who just lets the rest go through it? So they're grabbing some. So you grab some. You can't get those back. That's fine. You can't get back the earlier brachos of Shmona Esrei. But why would you give up? Why would you throw in the towel as opposed to buckling down and saying, I'm going to salvage whatever I can? So if the first approach doesn't speak to you about having kavana for 1 word or just the end of the bracha, if you find yourself not davening, Chafetz Chaim is suggesting to us that we should find the ability to buckle down and say, okay, so I woke up now in the 19th bracha. It's all hope is not lost. I can at least grab this one last iPad. But again, this is still dancing around the issue because I'm talking about how to daven without kavana, and I'm still saying, but you still can have kavana for part of Shmona Esrei. You still can have kavana for the rest of Shmona Esrei. I'm not really talking about not having kavana at all. So let's get down to what I actually advertised about. What if it's really what most of us experience all the time, and that's davening without kavana whatsoever. What exactly is the status of a tefillah that doesn't have kavana? So last week I shared with you the expression that goes back many hundreds of years, that's tefillah below kavana, kiguf below neshama. That a tefillah without any kavana behind it is like an empty body with no soul inside. All right, so that's true, but you know what? It is at least a guf. It is something. It may not be a full, alive, fully fledged, formed body with a life, but it is something. In source number 9 and other places as well, we discuss the possibility that tefillah, even without any kavana at all, just saying the words, can accomplish something. So that's strange. How can that be? We've been talking about tefillah as a relationship of us internalizing our neediness and acknowledging Hashem's ability to give it to us and acknowledging, hearing Hashem's call and responding to it. So what exactly is the value of tefillah that doesn't have any kavana whatsoever? So in source number 10, this is the Meshech HaChachma, which is Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk from 100 years ago. He wrote a commentary on Chumash called Meshech HaChachma. So he's commenting on a pasuk at the end of Sefer Bereishis and Vayechi, where Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef that he conquered Shechem b'charbi uvekashti. I've conquered it with my sword and my bow. Now, we don't usually picture Yaakov Avinu carrying weapons and fighting like that. Yaakov Avinu is typically saw as the righteous patriarch of the Jewish family. So on the side of the Chumash, you'll see Targum Unkelus, and this is also found in the Gemara. So normally, if someone quotes something, one of the commentaries on Chumash quotes something, and it's also a Gemara, we'll just say it's the Gemara, because the Gemara is an earlier source. But actually, Targum Unkelus comes before the Gemara. It's pretty cool. So Unkelus writes that Yaakov wasn't talking about a literal sword and a literal bow. Yaakov was talking about two types of tefillah, bitzlosi uviva usi, different Aramaic words that mean the same thing. They both mean tefillah. Yaakov conquered Shechem with his mouth by davening two different types of tefillahs. One type of tefillah is compared to a sword, and the second type of tefillah is compared to a bow. What does that mean? What does it mean that tefillah is compared to these weapons, and what exactly is the difference between a tefillah compared to a sword and a tefillah compared to a bow? So Meshech HaChachma in source number 10 explains that a sword is something that is inherently sharp. A sword doesn't require much force behind it to cause any damage. You can just by accident brush your hand against it and get a major deep cut. The sword has inherent power just because it is very sharp. A bow, on the other hand, is something that only has power because you shoot it. You invest and you pull back and it causes it to go far. Now you could take a bow and just poke someone with it, but that's the equivalent of a sword. What makes a bow, is that you shoot it. And its power is dependent on how much effort you put into it. So Meshech HaChachma explains it very beautifully. There are really two different types of tefillos. There are tefillos where we're putting a lot into it. We're having kavana. It's like the bow. We're pulling back and we're investing a lot of energy. And the more we put into it, the more we invest, the more we pull back, the farther it's going to go, the more power it actually has. And that's wonderful. But there's a second type of tefillah, one that we're all too familiar with, one which doesn't have anything behind it. There's no strength behind it. There's no kavana. There's nothing that we're putting into the tefillahs. We're just simply looking in a siddur, and we're saying the words, a chazal or mesakein, many thousands of years ago. But don't worry, it's not a waste. That also has value. It's like a sword. Tefillah is also like a sword. It's an inherently sharp object. Inherently, it can accomplish a lot. It may not be as powerful as a bow. There's no force behind the sword. And maybe tefillah without kavana doesn't accomplish the greatness that tefillah with kavana has of developing a relationship with Hashem. When Chazal are masaking the words of Shmona Esrei, the words of tefillah, they put so much depth into it. Those who have studied the words of tefillah can realize just how many meanings, how much significance the words have. It's an inherently sharp object. The way someone once put it was, tefillah has two aspects. There's you, and there's the code. Tefillah is like a code. Even if you don't know what you're pressing it mindlessly, the code still works. The code can still unlock certain gates. The code can still open up Shari Shamayim. And some days, we have what's called the bow days. We're davening like a bow. We have the strength. We're davening with a lot of passion, a lot of kavana. But other days, we're having a sword day. We're having a day where I got nothing behind this. But you know what? We have to remember that on a day like this, we have to buckle down and say every single word. The words themselves have inherent value, inherent strength, even without any force pushing behind it. And if we're not going to be able to have kavana on this day, at least to recognize that the words themselves have significance, and perhaps on a day where we're not focusing, to have extra careful kavana just to say the words, not even to know what they mean, just to say the words properly, to at least tap into the code aspect. This idea of Ava and Yira is similar to what we just talked about. Ava and Yira are two modes of relating to Hashem. Ava is that feeling, I'm so involved, I feel like I'm having a relationship with Hashem. And Yira is, I don't really feel like doing it. You know, I'm forced by Hashem, I have to do it no matter what. And we need both. As much as Ava is a greater level, but Yira is also important. You know, in the day we don't feel like going to work, or we don't feel like, you know, paying attention to our families. Too bad. There's some days when we're really feeling it, we're excited to go to work, we're excited to spend time with our families, and there are times when we're not. But you know what? Too bad. Right? The idea of Yira, the idea of obligation, the idea of something is being accomplished, just the fact that I'm here, that plays a role. And therefore, the third suggestion I'd like to put forward is, even if tefillah has absolutely nothing behind it, just make sure to say the words carefully can actually accomplish a lot. So, those are the three things I've talked about so far. Number one, the idea of having kavana for at least part. Try to, before you start, recognize I'm going to have kavana just for Hashem's name, just for Atah, and change it up. The more you change it up, the less it has a chance of becoming monotonous. Each day or each week, pick something else to focus on. Number two is, even if you wake up in the 17th or 18th bracha, grab whatever you can. Don't give up. And number three, even if tefillah has nothing behind it, there is something significant just to the words themselves. And therefore, on a day, on a Yira day, on a day when we're not feeling that Ava, we're not feeling that connection, to at least have Yira enough to say the words carefully to at least accomplish the code that tefillah is unlocking. Okay, so those are the three things that I wanted to get through just in order to explain how excited I am for the last idea. Because those ideas, as much as I've said them over with great passion, they're not necessarily exciting ideas. All right, so you're telling me I shouldn't have kavanah the entire time, at least have kavanah for part of the time, or at least kavanah for the rest, or daven a mindless tefillah. The fourth idea and the last idea I wanted to share is something that when I heard it, actually absolutely changed the way that I've been davening. I wasn't even thirsty, I just wanted to have a long pause to build it up. I once heard this idea from Rabbi Mark Penner, who is now the dean of Ritz. He used to be a rabbi in Israel of Halliswood. He had this amazing expression that was just so real. He said, you know what? Very often, we're not going to have kavana during Alat Tzadikim, okay? No offense to Alat Tzadikim, but it's right in the middle over there. It doesn't seem to relate to us day to day, so we're not having kavana during Alat Tzadikim. You know what? Fine. We're so busy thinking about the job interview, thinking about our family, thinking about whatever it is, that we can't focus on the Alat Tzadikims. But you know what? At least the thing that's distracting us, at least have kavana for that. If you can't focus on Alat Tzadikim because you're worrying about someone who's sick, well then at least during Rifa'enu, think about that. You're thinking about it anyway. If you can't focus on the middle brachos of Shmona Esrei or any brachos of Shmona Esrei because you're so focused on Parnassa, the meeting you have later today, at least have kavana during Atah Chonin to have success in that meeting, to have the proper wisdom to put things together. We may not be able to daven with kavana, but why don't we take the things that we're already feeling, the things we're already thinking about, and just channel them into davening anyway? To make tefillah real, to make tefillah a real relationship with Hashem, we have to acknowledge that He's there for everything. If I can't focus because I'm worried about getting a parking spot, it might seem petty to me. Well, am I going to bother Hashem about a parking spot? Well, if it's important enough to bother you from having kavana, then it's important enough to mention it during your davening. You're thinking about it anyway, so why say something else? And why not have kavana at least at the part of Shmona Esrei, if it's nothing that applies to a bracha specifically? So at least during Shema Kaleinu, which is more general, have in mind the very thing that's distracting you. That was Rabbi Penner's beautiful idea, the idea of not giving up. Not with the Chavetz Chaim's idea of whatever's left, just take it. Whatever's distracting you, be real about it. At least daven to Hashem for that thing. If it's something good, you're reminiscing of something good, so then thank Hashem for that. Something bothering you, then ask Hashem to take it away. We mentioned in previous shiurim that the whole purpose Hashem sends us little annoyances or sends us, you know, money raining down is to get our attention. If these things are on our mind, then the purpose is to get our attention to Hashem. Let's recognize Hashem in those things which are distracting us. When I heard this idea, it really resonated with me, and I've been using this at least the last 6-7 years, whenever I can, to try to take whatever I'm worried about. If I'm thinking about preparing a shiur, I'm davening mincha right before giving a shiur. So then you know what? I'm at least thinking about the shiur in my davening, asking Hashem to give me help to have a successful shiur. I want to take it one step further. Rabbi Penner's idea was that at least the bracha that relates to this topic have kavana in. But what if it's possible to take all the brachos of Shmona Esrei that are left, and to use the kavana, the thing that we're distracted by, and to stick that into every single bracha that's left? What do I mean? If you look at source number 11, this is the Maharal. Maharal of Prague, who lived in the 1500s, he has a commentary on Rashi called Gur Aryeh. And he's commenting on the story in Parshas Vayigash when Yaakov Avinu is finally reunited with Yosef. Can you imagine a father who hasn't seen his child in over 20 years, and he's finally excited to see Yosef? The Pasuk says that Yosef fell and he cried on his father's neck. But it doesn't tell us what Yaakov was doing. So a famous Rashi quotes, Rashi says, he was saying Kriyashma, he was davening at that time. And in the words of Shlomo HaMelech, come on! There's a time and place for everything. Why is Yaakov saying Kriyashma at a time like this? He should focus on his son. He should focus on his own joy. And the Maharal there in source number 11 explains that Yaakov Avinu wanted to dedicate this moment to Hashem. He was feeling it anyway. He was feeling so thankful, so excited, so full of love to see Yosef that he chose that moment to say Kriyashma, that moment to daven, that moment to be Mekabel Omachu Shemayim, that moment to choose a way to relate to Hashem and say, thank you. I'm thinking about it anyway. I'm already feeling this. Might as well channel the way that I'm feeling and put it into my davening. And that's on the positive side. In source number 12, we have another famous kriyashma, another seemingly out-of-place kriyashma. That's the Gemara in Brachos that tells the very tragic end of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was being tortured by the Romans, was being martyred, and he was saying kriyashma and smiling. The Talmidim said to him, really now? How are you able to focus on kriyashma at a time like this? And he said, I've been waiting my entire life to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, even if it means losing my life. He took his sadness, he took his grief, he took his pain, and channeled it into a kriyashma. This idea of, I'm already not feeling well, I'm not able to focus, I'm not able to think about the regular Alat Tzadikims. But you know what? I'm going to take how I'm feeling anyway, that which could easily distract me, and use it to cultivate it, to be able to have the best one to ask for, the most real. If it's on my mind, then it's important enough to me. If it's important enough to me, it's important enough to Hashem that it bothers us, or makes us happy, or is occupying our attention. It could be that we can have this kavana, if you're a little creative, throughout all the brachos of Shmona Esrei. I want to give you an example. Let's say a person is distracted, they're not able to have kavana because they're thinking about a job interview later today. So Reb Penner's idea was, okay, so you can't focus during most brachos, but at least the bracha Baruch Aleinu, when you're going to be asking for parnasa, daven there for whatever it is you're thinking about to have a successful interview. But what if we can do it for all the brachos? You go to Shmona Esrei and all you can think about is the interview. All you can think about is saying the right thing, making a good impression, getting a job. A person's been out of work for a few months, it's been very hard sitting at home. So the first bracha Shmona Esrei is Avos. We mention Hashem's greatness, and we talk about this Chus Avos. So a person might think to Hashem, you know what? I have a job interview later today, and you are so great. These praises relate to you and your ability to help me. I have to recognize that. And you know what? If I'm not worthy myself, at least the Chus Avos should help me have a good interview today. The second bracha is Mechaya Mesim, which literally means revives the dead. But you know what? Let's take it out of context. And a person thinks to themselves, I'm focusing on my job interview anyway. What if I spin it and think, I've been really out of it recently. I haven't been back on my feet. Mechaya Mesim, revive me, Hashem. Help me get back on my feet. Let me start over again. Let me get a new job and be able, going forward, to have a new life. Ata Kadosh. Hashem is great, and we make a Kiddush Hashem in this world. Help me get a job and be a good role model out there to represent you well, make a Kiddush Hashem in the workplace. Ata Chonen, at the interview, help me have the proper thing to say, have the good answer for everything. Make sure to not neglect any part of the interview. Hashivin Avinu L'Sarasach, Hashem, bring me back to a high spiritual level. But what if that refers to the idea of, you know what? I've been home the last few months. I haven't really been davening. I haven't really been connected. I've been depressed. I've been without a job. It's very, very hard being home by myself. Help me get a job so I can get back to the way it was. Let me return to my proper avodas Hashem. Slach lanu. You know what? Maybe I don't deserve to get a good job. Maybe I haven't been as perfect as I should have been. Please forgive me for the averos that might make me unworthy to get a job. Re'eva anyenu, Hashem, see all the suffering we're going through. It's been very hard for me at home. It's been very hard for me. Please, help me get this job. Help me get a good job that helps me support my family and I don't have to struggle anymore. Rafa'enu, I'm feeling sick to my stomach. My head hurts. I'm nauseous. I can't focus on anything else. I'm sick. So please heal me. Help me the interview go well. I shouldn't feel sick afterwards. And finally, Baruch Aleinu. Okay, that makes the most sense. And you can go on and on and on. You can be more creative as you get to the middle brachos about Yerushalayim. So good luck with that. My point is that even if we're not able to have kavana about all the words as they literally mean, perhaps we can take what we're feeling already and not just in the one bracha that specifically addresses it. if you're creative enough, anything could remind you of how you're feeling. You're feeling this way anyway. And it doesn't have to be something so serious as a job interview. It could just be thinking about your friends. Okay, so thank you, Hashem, for giving me good friends. Be thinking about our families. Okay, thank you for giving me a good family. Whatever it is on our mind, good, bad, petty, whatever is actually occupying our minds can have significance if we invest it that way. I want to end off with just a story that I think I heard recently, and it really brings home this idea. The story, someone named Jonah Waldman shared this on Twitter. I don't know who Jonah Waldman is, but he shared about his grandmother, his Bubby, who went through the Holocaust. In 1940, she found herself hiding in a church as the Germans were bombing the whole area. And they were there davening. People were in the bunkers saying any prayer that they knew. So her older brother, knew how to daven, knew how to say Tehillim, and he was davening. And she didn't know anything. She couldn't remember any prayer by heart. So there she is, everyone's davening, and this little girl in 1940 starts calling out the only prayer that she knows. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Again and again and again. After being down in that bunker for several hours, they came out and they noticed that all the buildings around the church had been destroyed by the German bombers. Every building except for the one that they were in. And she felt that even though her tefillah didn't make any sense, she was making a bracha, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, had nothing to do with the war, but still, she invested a lot in it. Many years later, her grandchildren pointed out to her, actually, if you take the words out of context, perhaps it does mean exactly what she was davening for. Listen carefully. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, Hashem, King of the whole world. Hamotzi, who takes out, lechem is the middle etymology of the word milchama. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz, who takes war out of the world. Her tefillah saved everybody. That was how the grandkids put it. We don't know exactly which tefillah worked, but it was so powerful. She was so real. She was feeling scared, and she didn't know what to say. And the words that she had chosen, the bracha of Hamotzi, had nothing to do with what it was she was asking for. But you know what? If you're creative enough, you can find meaning in anything, in any bracha. The fact that a bracha even mentions Elokeinu melech haolam, every single bracha mentions Hashem with the ultimate power in charge of the entire world. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Not the simple understanding by far. But looking back, we can put meaning. One who removes war from the earth was very relevant when she was hiding in that bunker under the church. And so, this is what I would like to leave you with today. I mentioned a couple of strategies you'll see on the screen over here. Number one, if we can't have kavana for the entire Shmona Esrei, at least have kavana for part of the bracha. Set the bar very low, at least one word, Atah, Hashem, and mix it up so it's different week to week. Number two, grab whatever's left, even if it doesn't, you know, you haven't had a perfect Shmona Esrei, whatever's left is very powerful. Have kavana for whatever you can. Grab the iPads that are still in your possession. Number three, even if you can't focus at all, tefillah is like a sharp object. Tefillah has inherent power in just the words themselves, even if you can't daven. So if you can't focus, we should at least be able to have kavana for the words. And lastly, what speaks most to me personally is this idea of, if we're going to be thinking about something anyway, good, bad, or petty, at least use that in your Shmona Esrei. Talk to Hashem. If you're worried about getting a parking ticket, then think about that and ask Him to help you not get a parking ticket. And if you're clever enough and if you focus, look for it enough, you might be able to find a reference in any bracha of Shmona Esrei for this idea to have kavana whenever possible. So this might be some ideas of how to daven without kavana, whether it's not kavana for the full thing or not kavana at all, or how to take the not kavana and to actually use it to have a different kind of kavana, that which is most real to us, that which is actually bothering us, to take that and have a relationship with Hashem. I just want to end off by saying that perhaps one reason why it's very hard for us to daven is because we don't always feel like our prayers are accomplishing anything. We don't always see the results. We don't see the walking out of the church and seeing that everything else was bombed. We don't always see that after praying, things work out better. What I'd like to discuss next week is how are we supposed to relate to the idea of tefillahs that are not answered? What does it mean when the tefillah is not answered? Are tefillahs ever unanswered? And how exactly should we keep davening for the same thing if it's not working? So please join us again next week as we move to that topic of tefillahs, even at a time when it seems that our tefillahs are not being answered.